right here because Dave Greinich is standing by and just saw the scratches. I just retweeted Andy Serling, who gets them out to everybody early. And we heard, of course, that Central Park is going to stay on the grass. And it's an entertaining race today. And then, of course, the Saturday action. I would say, Dave, that things bode well. If we're on the turf today, we should be okay the rest of the weekend. Good morning.
Good morning. Not so sure about that because it's supposed to get really cold overnight, and tomorrow is supposed to be just be a really cold day. So, I mean, tomorrow if we run on the turf, I'd want to put on ice skates for the horses. Maybe the turf course might be called Crunchy, not firm. Tomorrow, I don't know that what happens today necessarily means it happens tomorrow. But the plan is run one stake today, two stakes tomorrow, and they've got two allowance races on Sunday, and that will wrap it up because there's no more turf extras and there's no turf in the condition book. So we've got five at the most left.
Well, it certainly has been a better turf fall in general in New York. We've had a couple of years where the weather made things just so difficult, but we got a lot of good turf racing in, and they did get to utilize the new newer double wide turf course, and we'll look forward to the spring as well. Before we talk about everything going on tomorrow, how was Thanksgiving?
My Thanksgiving, very quiet, very quiet. The cancellation actually came in the wrong year.
Oh, that's funny. There was nothing special that you were going to miss had they run.
Family went down south to South Jersey, and as opposed to us having some people over where I could have helped out, and just me to go to South Jersey to have to turn around and be back early Friday morning didn't make much sense. So it was leftover Chinese food for me, which was fine.
How about that? Well, you should have let me know, and we would have shifted tack and got you over to the Siakas.
Oh, and he's close by too. I didn't know he was. He's in Merrick now too.
Absolutely. Whenever you want a good dose of Italian family life, you now are Siaka adjacent.
The Lohans and the Siakas in the same town. There's got to be a mini series there somewhere.
That's a good idea, actually. That'd be.
They're not far away from each other. They're not.
No, the mother lives right around the corner.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah. That's pretty funny. I love it. Well, let's dive in. And what a fun card it is. The 2-year-old races came up terrific, and the Cigar Mile, for a group of 3-year-olds that everybody likes to decry, there's some very major 3-year-olds involved in the Cigar Mile, and then some solid stake horses that fill out the lineup of 11. Let's start with the Cigar.
It's an interesting race because the two main protagonists, Spun to Run and Maximum Security, are lined up right next to each other. They have similar running styles in that they both like to mix it up early, both have the ability to rate just off of the pace, but it's going to be a good cat-and-mouse game between Irad Ortiz and Luis Saez, on Maximum Security. You would think that they're just going to break and play off each other. To me, when you have, and this is just my opinion, I think Maximum Security is the better horse when they're both at their game. To me, you just let your horse run the way he wants to run. If Maximum Security is chomping at the bit to go to the front, then you do it and you say, you know what, this is my game. You can play my game. And if you beat me at my game, my hat's off to you. The Spun to Run, I guess the dynamic for him is he's going two turns to one, where Max Security is coming off the one turn race, if that matters. I know Irad hustled him to the front in the Breeders' Cup, and it worked out. Does he do that again here? I don't know. It's a really interesting dynamic between those two. And then if they do hook it up and they do, knock each other out, heck, you have four or five, maybe more, that could maybe pick up the pieces. And ran into, right before, about a half hour ago, ran into Barkley Tag, and he was raving about how well Tale of Silence is doing. And that horse always runs his race and gets a piece at a big price. So if you like the favorites, go on with them. But, I think that's a horse that you might want to throw in underneath somewhere. because he just seems to, especially these one-turn races, comes with a run and gets some part of the action.
Well, I'm glad to hear that from Barkley. And Tale of Silence, I brought up with Mike Beer, your colleague, earlier this morning, a 59-3 bullet at Belmont, and that actually on the main track. I know the main track the other day they didn't allow training, but the main track still being utilized for training purposes.
The main track is closed up now.
Officially?
They closed it up officially yesterday. They sent out a text that said that it's done for the year. Basically, the main track is over when Shug says it's over, and Shug doesn't need it anymore because the horses that are running for him have completed all their training. And it's only funny because it's true.
Well, you should have heard him with me the other day when we were going through his lineup, and he's excited about the two-year-olds that are running, and he gave a summary, and this one's coming here, and we got Alandra and the Demoiselle, and then we're out of here.
Exactly.
He said, Allison, pack the car.
I've seen a lot of cars. By the way, I've seen a lot of cars parked down on the backside that have those rods in the back seat full of clothes. They look like closets.
Yes.
Because I guess these guys ship their cars down, and they put the clothes in the car, and they put them on the carrier that ships them down, and they jump on the airplane and meet them down there. They might actually have to rent the car for a day or two or something. I've seen a lot of those types of cars, a lot of those types of setups on the backstretch lately.
Well, that's the auto train from out of Virginia.
And there you go.
Always remember, if you send your car on the auto train, take your easy pass off the dashboard, off the windshield, or you're going to pay every single transponder from Lofton, Virginia, down to Sanford, Florida. That's my insider hack for the morning. It's a fun race, and we're so used to Dallas Stewart, but maybe it's those Fipke silks with the diamond on them. Maybe that's what makes these.
Tag has had some luck in this race with 50
yes.
horses. So I, you know,
Jersey Town.
Yep. $50 there, right? Or something like that. So it's, he's a good horse, that horse. He's a solid, he's only won three times, but and I'm not saying he's going to win, but he's, you know, there's a lot of other wagers to be made. He's one that you throw in there. And I'm a pat on the back fan. I just like the horse. He's a kind of a cool horse. Kind of blew up last time at the Empire Classic, where he was 3-5. Maybe he ran too fast in the Kelso, but he's had ample time to recover. One thing that Jeremiah has tried to do, and I don't think it's necessarily worked, but he shipped a lot of horses that he was planning to run at Aqueduct and have them train over the main track at Aqueduct. And in theory, it sounds like a great idea. In practice, I think he's only won two races at the meet, so I don't necessarily know that it's worked out, but he's tried to get, because I know that Pat on the Back is a horse that really excels at Belmont, both in the morning and the afternoon. Hasn't been so much the case, at least in the afternoon, in his two starts at Aqueduct. One was the Cigar Mile last year, so we'll see. But that horse, I just like, he's usually a hard-trying type. And, you know, sort of the Chad horses are a little bit unknown. They were, you know, considered good horses when they left here last year after their two-year-old seasons, but they didn't really do much at three. I think each of them, one of them has run once and one of them has run twice, and they're coming off allowance wins. You know, I don't know that they're ready to step up into this. Maybe they are. Maybe I'm selling them short, but I think they're horses that we want to watch as they develop next year when they're four. But, maybe they still have a good race in them left. It's looking at bikinis and network effect.
Dave, two sidebars about the Cigar Mile and the conversation that just came up with Barkley. Let's hit Barkley first. What were his more intimate thoughts about what transpired at Churchill with Tis the Law?
Yeah, he's obviously a little bit disappointed. I don't think Manny did much wrong there. He just couldn't get out. And when the horse did get out, he didn't want to. He really didn't want to split. You know, to me, he looked a little hesitant to want to go through that opening. I was even saying to him, he was funny. He said the one thing I got out of that was like 3,000 jockey agents calling him, But it's like, really, what would you fault the guy for? If he goes four wide and Silver Prospector splits horses and goes on, then you're bitching. Well, he went four wide. He could have saved the ground and went through the hole. The horse didn't want to go through the hole. He didn't get off great to be able to get a position. And then, you know, when you've got the target on your back, you're inside. They did a nice job of keeping him inside. I think he's, you know, he's naturally disappointed that the horse didn't win. But I think he knows that the track was a mess. He said it was wet all week. He said it was just a miserable time to be there. But you know, he still has horse to go. He still has a horse to go to next year, and he's looking at the Holy Bowl. The horse is already in pace in Palm Meadows, and he's looking at the Holy Bowl whenever they hook the Holy Bowl is.
Well, and for those that were familiar and recall the Funnyside story, the first time that Funnyside shipped for an opportunity and faced Open Company and Stakes Company was in the Holy Bowl, and he finished fifth with a bunch of incidents, including being whacked by the gate. He had a rough start, and you know, it looked a little like an eyesore when he got started on that front, but then quickly righted the ship and started to move forward quickly through the Louisiana Derby and the Wood.
I will say this. I'm sure, like, you know, I don't know. I didn't ask him about it, but he or maybe Jack Knowlton, when they looked at the overnight and saw the field for the Remsen, they might be kicking themselves a little bit for not staying home, because the Remsen didn't come up particularly. It came up in a wide open race, but it didn't come up a particularly strong race. There's no standout. I'm not even sure who the favorite's going to be honest with you.
Well, we'll talk Remsen momentarily, but I do want to, with you, reiterate the wonderful inclusion of John Hertler in the trophy presentation tomorrow for the Cigar.
Yeah, very nice gesture by Naira. You know, I'm sure John would have liked him to have maybe done it in another race, a warmer climate, maybe, as opposed to having to come out here tomorrow and freeze his butt off. But no, it's nice that they recognize John in some manner, and he's going to present the trophy for the Cigar. John, a longtime trainer on the circuit, who you know, retired, and you know, he's suffering from Parkinson's, and you know, he's a good guy. He was a good trainer, and I don't know that anybody who didn't root for his horses when they were running.
Well said. Let's talk about that Remsen and dive in. This is the mile in the eighth that everybody likes to beat up and insult, you know, as soon as the race is over. But there really feels like there's some horses that should excel at the mile in the eighth right away. It's certainly a group that's got some experience. There's no second time starter in here. The least that anybody has started is twice, but Maya and Al Gold have got Cleon Jones, who just keeps getting better very steadily and incrementally. There's a lot of interesting things, I think, coming into this. There's the pair of Todd Pletchers. I love what Jerry O'Dwyer decided to do with Adam Wachtel and Gary Barber. I thought Shotsky is a horse that should also be relishing the mile in the eighth and bypassed the Churchill opportunity last Saturday.
Yeah, he's an interesting horse, just from the standpoint of when he ran in the street sense, he was beaten three quarters of a length for third by Silver Prospector, who obviously came back and won the race last week at Churchill. So that, you know, that puts him in good stead. And just watching that race, to me, Shotsky seems to be a horse that's still trying to figure it out. Like, it looked like he was backing off and was retreating. And then when Silver Prospector came to him on the inside, he said, oh, okay, I'll run with you. And he decided to still give it an effort. But it, to me, at the quarter pole, I'm thinking, well, that horse is going to be last. And he still, you know, reengaged and came on again. And I do think that horse just has to figure it out. Maybe he'll have a day. Maybe it'll be Saturday. But, you know, there's probably a good race with his name on it somewhere. He just has to sort of figure things out a little bit. The horse that you didn't mention yet that I kind of favor a little bit is Billy Mott's horse, Forza D'Oro. Went back and watched both of his first two races, and when you watch his first start at Belmont, I mean, he set the gates open, and six of the seven horses went, and he didn't. He stayed right in the gate, and probably spotted the field five lengths. made a huge move, got within a half length of the lead at the eighth hole, and, you know, predictably flattened out and got beat by Azawid. But to me, if Azawid beats this horse again, I'll be surprised. I thought that was a huge effort for Forza D'Oro. Then he comes back and more professionally, and even in that race that he won by 3/4 of a length, if you watch the race, he's a bit headstrong. He's tossing his head about. He's sitting behind horses, three horses, getting dirt, and, you know, waiting for Junior to get him in the clear. And when Junior does get him in the clear, he runs all on his own. Junior never uncocks the stick, and he wins that race by 3/4 of a length, all on his own. I thought it was a pretty impressive effort. Saw his work on the 27th, which was in company, and I don't have it in front of me, so I don't know who he worked with, but it was a solid move, and I think I like him in this spot, Forza D'Oro for Mott, who has won this race twice with Court Vision and To Honor and Serve. And just to reiterate, the two Fletcher horses, well, I don't know if they will both run tomorrow, but they probably will. But they both did scratch because, as you said, the top of this, the Central Park, is on the turf.
Well, and you know, a couple of things to note about Forza D'Oro. This is a Spitestown, a Don Alberto homebred. That mare was who's a hard spun, Filari de Oro. Michael Pino trained her, and this is an interesting family. The horse, there's a couple of old time favorites that are involved with this pedigree of mine. And first of all, there's the sibling, number one, Silver Dust. It's Silver Dust's brother, and that dam, Filari Lauro, she was a sister of a Tony Reinstedler hard hitter. You remember Goulding's Green?
Yeah, I do.
Goulding's Green. This is a cool family, and not only Goulding's Green, but Samantha Siegel, who's probably listening and should be. Sam, why aren't you here? I'm in town, and you're not at Clocker's Corner. Samantha Siegel's baby bird is from this family.
Yeah, I think it's a good family. He's a good looking horse, and he's run two very good races. Getting beat may have even been better than when he won. And Mott's horses tend to get a little bit better with each start. You know, I did highlight Mott's 2-year-olds during Saratoga, in my Saratoga piece, and predictably they weren't as good at Saratoga as they were in the fall, because Mott's horses like a little bit more distance. So next year I probably need to hold my 2-year-old story on Mott until Belmont, because once they get out to a mile, they start to excel. And, we've been seeing that. He's had a good meet, and even yesterday won the race with Antoinette, the off-the-turf Tepton with Antoinette, who got a nice ride by Joe Bravo, and maybe builds on a little bit of a roll here. He's got Homeland in the stake today, on the Central Park today.
How about the girls' race? I had Shug the other day, as I mentioned, and he sounded, you know, Shug is a fairly easy read sometimes, and Alondra, he seems over the moon with how she's coming into this.
Well, obviously, a bit disappointed when the Alcibiade, she didn't break great. It wasn't terrible. I didn't think it was totally the reason that she got beat, but she was far back than she needs to be and wanted to be. And, still kind of fought on, made a big middle move, and then, got beat a long way by British Idiom, but that's okay. British Idiom came back and won the Breeders' Cup, so it's not terrible. It's a 12-horse field that's going to scratch down to at least 11, because I Dare You ran second yesterday, so she'll come out. Alondra, you know, it's funny, I asked him about Alondra the other day, and he kind of popped her out of the gate, and she worked with a men's, and the time wasn't very, for a gate work, the time wasn't very fast, and he's like, you know, with the men's, who's in the rem, he's like, I don't know if that horse is a good horse or not a good horse. He says he's not a good workhorse, he moves like a good horse, but he just doesn't work very fast. And he says, I'm still trying to figure out if he's a good horse or not a good horse, so working in company with amends doesn't really show anything. But I know he's high on this filly. It was obviously, you know, it's a big step to go from a maiden race to the grade one. She was favored in the big field at Keeneland, and probably the best thing that didn't happen to her, because if she won, they probably would have wanted to go to the Breeders' Cup, and he didn't really relish his time in California. So the fact that she didn't have to go was probably a benefit for her. You got Maydeen, who, you know, couldn't have been more impressive and attentive than she was for Mark Hennig, who I know is dying to get this filly out around two turns. And now is his opportunity for Cortland Farms. And, you know, Mark's barn's picked up lately. It's been a bit of a slow start. His only win at the meet was Maydean until yesterday when he doubled down with a couple of Bourbon Lane horses. So, you know, that's a good sign for him. 50 Shades of Green for Leonard Green, and John Service comes off a nice two-turn maiden win at Monmouth. Was Monmouth, right? Yes. And then you have a couple of Jeremiah horses, Daphne Moon, who disappointed in the Frisette, Critical Value, who's stepping up out of the New York Bred Company. Both those horses seem to be doing well and have trained well at Aqueduct. Again, we still don't know if that has worked for him so far.
Well, two big, bulky fields for the late-season standards, the Remsen and the Demoiselle. The Go for One, the other graded stake on the card, and we'll mention that the late stakes, the three that end the card, the Demoiselle, the Remsen, and the Cigar Mile, are on television. One last TV special for those watching, and the full Monty is being, I think, all of the personnel have been recalled for the weekend broadcast. The Go for One, maybe they'll show it on tape, but the Go for One ended up with six, and it seemed like they were kind of looking around for some participants. And I had Mike Stidham on the other morning, and he let out that Cigarro Row was going to follow up the Pumpkin Pie, and she really adds to this. And obviously, Spice Perfection coming over from Churchill for Peter Miller, and this ended up okay with the six-pack.
Yeah, I mean, I think if Spice Perfection runs her race, I think she's going to be awful tough to beat. And remember tomorrow also the Empire Six wager is a must-giveaway day tomorrow. And the Empire, the Gopher Wand is the second leg in that wager. And I can see a lot of people, you know, singling Spice Perfection. She is a multiple grade one winner at 7/8. I don't see why she wouldn't get a mile, especially a one-turn mile. She was fourth, beaten 9 lengths by Clefefe in the Breeders' Cup Filly Mare Sprint, which Peter had said even beforehand that she had grabbed a quarter when she won the TCA, the Thoroughbred Club of America, at Keeneland, and may have missed some training in the month between that race and the Breeders' Cup, and he thought it might have caught up with her. Now, look, they weren't beating Clefefe that day, and but she might have been a little bit closer. But I have to think the negative here is, to me, is there's not, I can't define the pace in the race, to be honest. I don't know who that's going to be.
Point.
I don't know if that's, now, but if you go back to the Madison in April, Spice Perfection was within a half a length or a length at each call. So perhaps she can be versatile enough to be close to the pace. Now, you know, they put her through the auction ring. Here's what happens, you know, with these horses. She runs the Breeders' Cup, jumps on a plane, goes to Kentucky, goes to the auction ring, doesn't meet her reserve, and then she's right back on the work camp. So she's actually had, I think I wrote two, but she's actually breezed three times since the Breeders' Cup. So she's got her training in, even though, you know, right after the Breeders' Cup she was supposed to be sold. And I just don't see a lot of depth. You know, one horse that's a bit interesting to me, and you know, if you pull around on exactives or if you want to try and beat the favorite, our Supernova. I know it's a New York bred who just won a Stallion Stakes race, but she was really good, I thought, in that Stallion Stakes race. And this filly has run some decent races, even way back in her form, or earlier, that's not even on the books here. And when Charlie Baker got her, he said, look, I was just trying to get her into distance races. And everything that I could find when I first got her, like in April, was three quarters. So I had a runner. But he said, to me, she wants to go the one-turn mile or maybe even a little bit further. And even though she lost, her best race probably for Charlie was the one-turn mile where she got beat by Rodzikowski at 20-1 in the Empire Distaff. She just got beat ahead. And again, the thing that could work against her because of that style, she benefited from a 45 3/2. I don't know if she gets a 45 3/2 tomorrow. But she's a bit interesting horse. She comes up with a bullet work off of the Stallion Stakes race. And, you know, if I was playing around, if I wanted to just play a cold punch exact, I might just do the 3/6.
She's got the best buyer at the distance, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, she's solid. I think she's solid. She's gotten her races have all been, you know, competitive, and if you buy into what Charlie's saying, you know, the one-turn miles may be the better the distance of what she wants. Interesting to see need supervision running back a week after she won the safely kept. To me, it all sounds good in theory. Hey, she came out of the race great. She probably, you know, we have nothing really to shoot for, so we might as well run in here. And that's all fine and good. And look, it's a great at stakes. If she gets third, they'll probably be over the moon because they'll have a great at stakes placed three-year-old filly going into her four-year-old year.
Well, this has got Gary Barber written all over it, and he's taking a page from his successful execution of Got Stormy when you know, they came right back after the De La Rose and parlayed it into the four-star Dave. And I told the story earlier in the week. When I sent Gary a congratulations on Got Stormy, he acknowledged it. But the first response was, "Did you see Need Supervision win the safely kept?" He was equally excited about this 3-year old painter filly that has really, you know, had a very nice year. And you go back to that race at Churchill, that allowance win. It was in the slop, but she. She likes the one turn mile, and this race came up. Andrew Burns, I'm sure, was you know, going through the Rolodex trying to make this a complete field, and he did okay. I think it's a fun group. Dave, before we go, I've got to ask you about the maiden races, and there's certainly some prominent potential babies that are coming out in those 2 mile races and in the 6 furlong race.
Yeah, you got the mile race, the first race of the day. They've all sort of run. We've seen a little bit of them. I'm interested. You know, I know that Jonathan sent the Bernardini colt down to Laurel, but I wonder first time out. But I thought, you know, that from a pedigree standpoint, I thought First Degree was a bit interesting. In the first race, you also have the cost basis for Chad, the Into Mischief colt, who was second going the one turn mile after having some. A bit of trouble in his debut, and then Croyer Moore, I thought, for you know, the honor code colt for Todd trying the dirt. He's by honor code, but I would think that he should handle the dirt. What race is the next one? The seventh?
Yes, the fifth. Yep.
The fifth there. Let's see what that one's about. That's the Autumn Days. Come through these races, man. These races. The fifth is another mile race. Farmington Road was part of that. You know, he kind of fell off the radar a little bit, but Belavia, who was for Jenna Antonucci, then got sold and won for Todd. You know, this was a stablemate for him that day, Farmington Road, who was a bit disappointing, but also had a bit of a wide trip. I tell you, a horse that I've watched train that maybe is the one that wants the distance is Moon Over Miami. First time out going 3/4, but just watching this horse train at Saratoga and then here at downstate at Belmont, he's by Malibu Moon out of a Smart Strike Dam, so maybe the extra distance is going to help that horse. Moon Over Miami, again, another one for Mott. And then you have a $725,000 Medaglia d'Oro for Cortland Farms and Mark Hennig, who's coming out, who shows a bullet work out of the gate last week in Orifice. Yeah, it's a very, as you said at the top, it's a very fun card. A lot of good 2-year-old races. Race 7 is a 3/4 race for another Mott horse there, King Kozan. And then there's a Dermot Magner horse for Phoenix Thoroughbreds, the Angry Man, who's had some sharp workouts as well. And Jeremiah's got a horse, a Wicked Strong called Villainous. So I don't know if we've seen too many Wicked Strongs in New York. You probably know better than I do. But. I'm sort of interested to see how those horses run. So yeah, it's a really fun card tomorrow. Might be the last fun card we have for a while, but it's a good one.
Well, and as you frequently remind me, this will typically be the last conversation of Dave Grenig for 2019.
Oh, no question for 2019. But the over under is the over under is Gotham Day.
That's not
dependent on who shows up in that race. More likely Wood, which has been announced as officially being April 4th. By the way, don't blink in April, or you'll miss the Aqueduct Spring Meet. It's a whopping 13 days. For all the concern of this construction of this arena inhibiting NYRA racing or racing at Belmont. We're going to Belmont earlier in 2020 than I think we've ever gone before. I think opening day is like April 23rd.
That's pretty funny.
It's crazy.
That is funny, and I guess it hasn't been nearly as disruptive as thought. And Dave, on that topic, also, I banged out the story, just gave everybody the highlight. Not that it was unexpected, but Saratoga's schedule set now, from Labor Day, working backwards the 8 weeks. The one thing people were wondering about is whether the dark days would be Monday, Tuesday, or potentially Tuesday, Wednesday, after some town and gown complaints from the merchants about the Monday dark day. And they're going to go another year with Monday and Tuesdays as the dark calendar.
Yeah, and no surprise to me. I mean, you've gone to Saratoga on Mondays. I've gone to Saratoga on Mondays for a long time, as you have. Nobody's there, so I don't know where.
Yeah,
I don't
true.
Know where all the merchants are. So where the stories were coming out that the merchants were so upset that, oh my God, we're losing our business. No one was at the track on Mondays. It was they would announce whatever they would announce, and that would be phony because of the season passes being counted. Nobody went to the track on Mondays. I was like shocked when I started hearing some rumblings that, oh, they're going to race Mondays and these dark Tuesdays and Wednesdays. Like, why? Nobody goes to the racetrack on Mondays. Monmouth Park, many years ago, tried to do their race week Friday through Tuesday. They did it once. As Joe Hirsch would say, somebody asked Joe Hirsch if we went to a restaurant one time, did you like it? And said, I said, I went there once. They tried it once. That didn't work. Mondays is not a big day for gambling on horse racing. I'm not surprised that the schedule is back to what it is. The only thing that I might have done, and I know this sounds a little contradictory, is just to have opening day on a Friday. I might have gone Friday through Monday for the first week, and then gone back to Wednesday through Sunday the rest of it. Only because it's opening week, and opening week has a little bit more cachet than other weeks, but. They're going to stay with the Thursday through Sunday, which is fine. Maybe next year, because it'll be the second time, it'll feel a little bit different than just a regular Thursday. But that would have been the only thing that I might have thought they would have done different, is to go back to a Friday opening. And then the very first weekend of the meet, hey, it's Saratoga, make it a holiday weekend, Friday through Monday. But they didn't do it, and that's fine. I don't care.
Yeah, I think it's the Sunday night. It's the Sunday night action that the restaurateurs were complaining about.
Going to the paddock, whether it was last year or previous years, going to the paddock for the feature race, I had a fight to go that way because everyone was going toward the exit. No matter what year it was, last year, the year before, 1999, doesn't matter. They're leaving. They've seen enough. They don't care if it's whatever race it is. They got to go home. They got to work on Monday.
Dave Greinig, everybody. DRF Greinig, best for the rest of the holiday season, holiday fest, and I'm sure we'll talk for the Withers.
Okay. You should call me on Wednesday, January 1st, when everyone else is hungover. We've got Jerome. We got Independence Hall. We can talk then.
That's a good point, actually. And now you're making me realize I didn't realize it was a Wednesday. I got to figure out what to do. Casey and I will talk about our holiday schedule. I'm glad you brought that up. All right. Dave Greinig,
everybody. We'll tape something. All right. Happy holidays to you and your listeners, Steve.
Dave Greinig, folks, that just works so hard, does such a great job. Let's take not a break, but we'll stay right here because we've got Jeff Siegel standing by. Not a lot to discuss with Jeff, but we want to get a couple of plays in from him. Jay Siegel Racing on your Twitter machine and xbtv.com. Jeff, good morning.
Good morning. How are things at Santa Anita this early morning?
It's picked up. It was very quiet early, and then as the sun came up, we got a little bit more traffic. And I'll tell you, the horse flesh been watching all morning, very nice, and just had the first Baffert parade coming through. He doesn't walk anymore now. He's got this golf cart he's got this festooned golf cart that he tools around Clocker's Corner these days, and it feels pretty good. Listen, being here, Jeff, there's nothing like sitting here. It's the best.
Well, it is good, and the weather has been a little bit wet. It may even get wet again tomorrow, which will, I don't know if it'll impact the two big races for two-year-olds at Los Al, but we'll see. And, kind of just from my end of it, just kind of waiting for the big meeting to start the day after Christmas and looking forward to that. But some great racing this weekend, not only here in California, but very intrigued by the two-year-old racing at Aqueduct. Of course, Laurel's got some good races, the Claiming Crown at Gulfstream. So supposed to be kind of like the off time, off season, but man, it's busy, and it's a good busy.
It's been remarkable. I mean, we had a great November of racing, and now here the calendar, goes to December. This is another good weekend after the closing weekends at Churchill and Del Mar. Next week, the first graded stake action at Gulfstream swings into action. It's crazy how much good racing, and we're getting a lot of the return of three-year-olds that, you know, took the middle portion of the year off. I mentioned some names like Always Mining and La Citas up at Laurel this weekend. We've got those three-year-olds in the Cigar Mile that are showcased prominently, the two of Chad and Spun to Run and Maximum Security. I mean, there's a lot of good things going on. And then there's all the two-year-old racing. A quick hit, Jeff, before we talk about whatever you are looking at for the weekend, summarize Del Mar's flourish that finished up so interestingly last weekend with all the turf stakes.
Yeah, I mean, they had a good meeting. I mean, they lost a couple of days due to the weather, but ended up with good, excellent racing. The grass racing was very good. It was basically what we have seen over the years in the older division, who's next type of approach in the older grass division. But God Stormy came out and did very well. We were happy to see her run so well. But really the time of the year, it really is for the two-year-olds, because especially this year where we don't look like we have, a complete standout, although I do think Independence Hall is the best two-year-old that I've seen. I'm not sure if he's got the resume to be a champion, but we've got great two-year-old racing this weekend, and you never know when the next star is going to show up. And so at least in December for me, I'm always looking forward to seeing who our classic contenders will be after the first of the year. And we've got plenty of that coming up this week.
Well, let's get into the weekend, and whether it's Cigar Mile and the two-year-old stakes in New York, I know the fields are shorter at Los Al, but what more could you want? The second and third place finishers from both of the juvenile races, male and female, plus the Baffert pair. There's a lot of stars in the making, and when you think about a Dona Veloce, a star that is already somewhat established.
Yeah, I mean, she really took the worst of it in a sense where she didn't really have the foundation or the experience after breaking her maiden. You have to run her back in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. It's in your own backyard. Simon Callahan, who had, always liked her and all that, but just had the one sprint and deep track at Santa Anita at that time. It's really kind of a very testing situation for her, and I thought she performed admirably, beaten the neck by the more experienced and a really good filly in her own right, British Idiom, will certainly be the champion. But she obviously came out of that race well, Dona Veloce, and now they've been training over at Los Al with this specific race in mind. It is a grade one, and it's a very important race for her as a grade one. So she does look like, assuming she runs her race, maybe she'll improve. I don't know if she has to improve all that much after running second in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, but if she does, it'll be her race for the taking, and then we can see how she develops next year, next winter as a three-year-old. So that's a good race, and of course, the Los Al Futurity, which is for some reason a grade two now. I don't get that. I know that there's only four in here, but these are four quality horses, and you can make a really good case for really all four of them. I Thousand Words, when he won his debut, I liked him, obviously. He was well-regarded. I didn't think he was going to be at his best sprinting, but he won anyway. And now he puts blinkers on, and then the other colt, who's undefeated, High Velocity, who won the Bob Hope, he takes blinkers off. So Bob Baffert's kind of throwing a couple of monkey wrenches in there, trying to figure out which is going to improve, which one will we improve with this switch in the equipment. The one that really impressed me, though, on a colt that I really thought had a good chance at a big price in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile was Anno d'Or, who had that one run at Golden Gate and was supposed to run in the turf race couldn't get in. They run him on the dirt. He never even trained on dirt. And yet he got beat ahead in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, went back to Golden Gate to train in the all-weather. I think he's a really good colt by Medaglia d'Oro, and I actually think he's got a really good chance to step forward and win this race. So a couple of really good races at Los Al, maybe not for gambling purposes, but definitely for fans of the sport. So looking forward to that.
What else you like this weekend?
Well, I mean, actually, I like the two races. I love the Aqueduct card. You know, I mean, those races on Saturday, I'm sure you've had discussions with previous guests on them, but I think the two-year-old races at Aqueduct are very, very good, and I'm looking forward to that. I'm shuffling my paper here. Before I get to that,
sure.
though, I think Maximum Security is going to win, but I'm going to give you an exact in that race because I know that he's going to be a short price and all that, but I think looking at Bikinis has got a really good chance to make a serious run here. If you look at his form, he's undefeated around one turn, as is Maximum Security, by the way, and this is a one-turn mile, whereas the other main contender, Spun to Run, he has never won around one turn. So I put a lot of emphasis on that, even though Spun to Run is coming off the Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile win, but one turn, two turn miles, two different things. And I think Maximum Security will beat Spun to Run, and I think he's going to have to look over his shoulder and see where looking at Bikinis is in the final furlong because, and I think he's going to run his best race. Now, as for the two-year-olds, I really like Alondra in the Demoiselle. I mean, she really got bounced back at the start, lost early position. Actually finished very well, I thought, in the El Sabaides to be a distant third, and I don't think she's going to be that far back. Assuming she comes out of the race cleanly, she's 4-1 in the morning line. I don't know whether she'll be that, but I really do like Alondra. And I also like in the next race, the Remsen, Alpha 66. Had the rail on the Champagne, broke badly, fell far back, farther back than the line will show, made a good mid-race move to enter contention. I thought he was going to kind of hang it up at the 8th pole, but he kept coming. He got beat less than 5 lengths, blinkers come off, Johnny V stays aboard for Todd Pletcher. Hopefully he'll lead with his field, cope by Liam's map. I think he's also 4-1 in the morning line. I think Alpha 66 has got a really good chance to build on the promise that he showed in, not only in the Champagne, but in his maiden win at Belmont back in early September. So I think Aqueduct, I mean, that, and there's some other races in there as well that are pretty interesting. So for me, lots of early action out here in California watching the video and watching the telecast from Aqueduct before we get into the racing at Los Al.
Well, and opportunity, Jeff, with the force out of the Empire Six tomorrow, and having 4 graded stakes, and then two maidens to negotiate, that make it a little tricky. But there's some class involved and some good connection stats. So from that standpoint, it feels like a good opportunity. These force outs are, for me, the only time to play these jackpot wagers.
Yeah, I mean, that, again, you always have to wait for late scratches because of weather. So I'll really get in, really heavy into that in the morning. I don't want to leave without mentioning the Claiming Crown, which, the way, I will have a full card analysis of the entire every race analysis wagering strategies on XPTV.com and ExpressBet.com, so you can check that out. But again, I'm going to spend the day handicapping that because there are full fields, horses coming from everywhere. I mean, it's a handicapping challenge, but there's chances for some good gambling at Gulfstream tomorrow as well with the Claiming Crown. I was looking through the card. I haven't really gotten really deep yet, but I don't know how many times the Claiming Crown has had the third place finish in the Breeders' Cup Turf Sprint in it, a month later. But Shecky Shabazz goes in the 7th, and he's 7-5 on the morning line. He's no cinch because there's a very good horse in there named Tiger Blood, who's really fast, undefeated at Gulfstream Park, 4-4-4. Old Gelding, who's coming off a real easy win at Gulfstream Park West. But so Shecky Shabazz, I mean, you think, oh, he's going from the Breeders' Cup down to the Claiming Crown. There's a big drop in class. It is, but there's a horse in there, Tiger Blood, who doesn't know that, and so that's just one of several really good races on the Gulfstream Park program tomorrow.
No doubt. And Mike Welch, we're waiting on Mike to join us, and we'll get into some Claiming Crown spots and catch up with him. You know, you do have some South Florida stalwarts, as it were, that are involved here, and the board to some degree will give you some hints. And I'm just digging down into what is it? Is that the glass? Is that the glass slipper? No, it's the it's the dash, the dash is fairly early. It's in the, was that the fifth? Yeah, it's the fifth. And I'm going to guess that Rich Averill will have a say somewhere along the way on this card. And he's got our next role, who, you know, might not be in the best form, but caught my eye, 10-1. And Averill, there's certain people, Averill, and of course years ago, Ken Ramsey, Ron Paolucci. You know, there's certain guys that really point for this and strategically pick off horses out of the claiming ranks earlier in the year with this end game in mind. So, Jeff, I appreciate that you're going to do the work on it. So, make it easier for everybody.
Yeah, it's a lot of work. You know, when here in California, I can almost, not quite, but I can almost look at, make my selections off the overnight because I know the horses so well. You know, I watch
there you
the
go.
Train
yeah.
and I watch
yeah.
them, you know. But at Gulfstream, it's kind of refreshing because I'm looking at horses that I really don't follow, and I actually have to dig down deep, do the work, watch the video, check the workouts on xbtv.com, and try to come up with something that maybe isn't that obvious. And there's, I don't know, 11 races to do that with.
Yeah.
So it's kind of fun, and I'm looking forward to that. So that's what I'll be doing this afternoon. I'll have my Los Al races on the video and just kind of relaxing and getting ready for tomorrow.
Well, and I don't know if you're going to extend things into Sunday for the Cup de Caribe. start checking out all the Hippodromo action.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what. Now that kind of like draws the line for me. I pay so much emphasis on what I see, and there's no video, very little video. I mean, we got some workouts on XBTV, but that doesn't tell you everything. And I don't know these horses that well, and I'm kind of guessing. And, you know, as a handicapper, as a gambler, I don't like to guess. I can be right or wrong, but I don't like to do it by guesswork. So I'll watch because it's good racing and it's competitive and all that. I'm not sure how deep I'll get into it, but it's still good for Sunday, and we'll be watching.
Well, and Mike, when Mike joins us, you know, there's a few horses that came early that arrived well in advance to get, you know, to get track work. And that was a formula last year that I came into, you know, into play, and it's become a big deal. Listen, I've said for years that as an industry, we're making a terrible marketing miscue by not reaching out, by not, you know, we've got such a strong population of successful Latin personnel, whether it's in the training side, the riding colonies, the ownership, you name it, the backstretch staff is. Why are we not doing a better job extending a hand for you know, the horse playing and ownership recruitment, etc., of the Latino population? I don't get it.
Yeah, well, I mean, they're trying. I know that this is a popular thing, and you know, it comes actually. I guess it's Southern Hemisphere, so it's kind of like the summertime. I don't know, you know, what the issues are on bringing these horses up and how difficult it may or may not be. But you're right. From what I understand, those horses that have gotten here early and seem to have an edge. And like I say, I actually checked out a couple of the breezes for some of the horses already on the XBTV. And
nice.
To be honest, they didn't look like them much to me, but they're all running against each other. So it's, you know, everything's relative. And so we'll see what happens. There's other good races there as well on that Sunday program. But tomorrow, to me, is the main day. That's where there's action on all fronts. There's actually even a good race at Golden Gate Fields tomorrow, a race called the Gold Rush Stakes for 2-year-olds
yeah.
going a mile. And so I'm going to check that out. You don't really expect to see any world beaters there, but I looked at the field. It seems like it's fairly competitive, and maybe it's something you want to look at as well. You never know where a good horse is going to come from.
Exactly.
And, you know, we found that out with Anno d'Oro coming up from Golden Gate in a grass race, showing up and almost winning the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. So
exactly.
You just never know where they're going to come from.
Jeff Siegel, everybody. We know where he comes from. XBTV.com. Jay Siegel Racing on your Twitter. And we'll talk to Jeff next week. We'll stay right here. We've got just about 5 minutes to spend with Mike Welch, who has popped free. And I didn't want to get the weekend preview in without a visit from Mike, who's got two big days of racing, Claiming Crown tomorrow and the Cup de Caribe on Sunday. Mike, good morning.
Morning, Steve.
Top lines for you going into Saturday and Claiming Crown.
You know, the Claiming Crown is more of a really good betting card than it is, for me anyway, an opportunity to find, like, you know, great plays, because it's more of a claiming kind of thing, you know. There's no maiden races in the Claiming Crown, although there are two very tough turf races on the card earlier in the day. But, you know, for the Claiming Crown itself, it's just for guys that like big fields and wide open races, that's the name of the game there.
Well, a couple of spots to focus in on, that, you know, the presence of Shecky Shabazz on the card. It's not unusual to have a major stake horse or two that end up dotting the overnight and the PPs. Shecky Shabazz taking advantage here the opportunity.
Yeah, I mean, in the past, it seems to me we've had more kind of graded stakes horses on these Claiming Crown cards. He's really the only one tomorrow, but, I mean, he's not only a graded stakes type. He comes out of the Breeders' Cup where he ran third in the turf sprint, ran a big race. Jason Service said if he had broken just a little bit better, he thinks he could have been second at least. And, but he's no cinch in there just because of his running style and all the speed in there and the nature of 5 furlong turf races in general. I don't think he has to win. He's obviously going to be not only well bet, he's probably going to be over bet. But he is the biggest name on the card, no doubt. And look, if things had broken differently, as I wrote in my story, Maximum Security was eligible for one of the races on the card, and so was Math Wizard. You know, I mean, their connection's chosen to, you know, get an easier race into them before the winter session opened here. We could have seen both of them on this card. That's just what the Claiming Crown brings to the table. You never know what you're going to get some years, horses that have developed out of the claiming races. But the Jewel is the main event, and it's for $200,000, so it's no light thing for the connections that are running in this race. And, you know, Jason Service may have the right one there, too, in Leotone, who he took for 12.5 out of a race in June at Belmont, has won 250 claimers with him. Last time he got 104 buyer at Belmont Park, winning an open 50 race. And if he gets loose on the lead here again and runs that race, he's going to win again. The question is, will he get loose? Because there is a bunch of other speed in the field.
Well, obviously, top to bottom, big, full, interesting fields for the Claiming Crown. Then we look at Sunday, Mike, and the Coupe de Caribe, four races at the end of the card. But frankly, there's a maiden race for older horses, for three and ups, that is very notable. There's some real quality to it. And then the two-year-old maiden as well. So Sunday should not just be glossed over.
No. It's wintertime in Gulfstream Park, and even though we're just starting to meet, you're already seeing in some of these maiden races some interesting horses, some interesting breeding, and it's only going to get more and more as more of these guys come down here. I mean, most of the northern guys really aren't in yet, and those that are here with the first wave and haven't even started to breeze here. Mark Hennig just got here. Ken McPeak just got here. Dale Romans isn't here yet. Just the Gulfstream itself, and up at Palm Meadows, you got the same situation. McGahee, Mott, those guys are just starting to trickle in now, too. So it'll take a few weeks before we could really say we're into the meat of the meat. But you still have these kind of races right now where some of those guys are showing up with their early horses. Jason Service has been here for a while, so he's already run a few maidens in these first-time starters in these maiden races. So that's what you get. I mean, the Caribe races, they're a little bit inscrutable. It's just hard to compare horses from all these different countries we know really little about. But that's where the Clocker Report comes in, because I've seen most of these horses work at least once, some of them two or three times. So to me, that's one of the only edges you got, because the form is kind of inscrutable to me.
Papa Candelo, maybe the horse to beat?
He's one of the ones. I mean, look, he's been unbeaten and untested so far in Puerto Rico. Now, the Puerto Rican horses have not had great success outside their country in these Caribe races, so it remains to be seen. It's just, you know, it's hard to say what he's beaten. He's won his races by 16, 17 lengths, but you know, it looks like he's beating the same horses every time, and you just don't know what kind of quality they're up against. Yeah. That's why, I, you know, there's no buyer figures. There's no, you know, really class things to compare them with, because you just don't know what kind of horses are running in these places. So, you know, that's why I say I think the of all the days of all the races that we clock horses for here, aside from the maiden races and maybe even along with the maiden races, these Caribe races, we've unearthed some pretty good winners over the last couple of years here, and maybe we'll be able to do it again on Sunday.
Mike, I appreciate it. DRF Welch, everybody, both days, Clocker Report for the weekend. Buy it for the whole season, for the whole winter at Gulfstream. And, Mike, when we talk next, I want to get to Sol Volante and Tonalist Shape, the winners of the Pulpit and the Hut Hut. So maybe next week or the week after, before the season wraps up, before the year wraps up. Thanks a lot, though. Talk soon.
Okay.
Mike Welch, everybody, and a busy morning that picked up momentum as we went. Mike Beer and James Scully, and we didn't get to Nick Hammer. We got Hammer, though. We didn't get to Ed. We had Dave Granick-Siegel and Welsh. Good luck this weekend, everybody. Talk to you Monday from Arizona.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio. At the track or on the go, ExpressBet is your way to play the races. ExpressBet provides legal and secure online and mobile betting on more than 300 of the world's top tracks and all the big events. And when you sign up for an ExpressBet account today with promo code BYK, that's B-Y-K, you'll receive a $125 bonus. Once you've signed up, you can take your wagering experience to the next level with XB Rewards, ExpressBet's industry-leading loyalty program. Earn points for every bet you make and cash them in on everything from wagering credits to exclusive racetrack experiences. So what are you waiting for? Sign up for ExpressBet today using promo code BYK. That's B-Y-K to get your $125 bonus. Conditions apply. Must be 18 or older and 21 in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet LLC and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void where prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
145 over 92.
180 over 111.
182 over 100.
And I had a heart attack and a cardiac arrest. And then a stroke.
Your blood pressure numbers could change your life.
A lot of people don't understand, including myself, I didn't, now I do, the impact of having a stroke.
My memory is shot.
When I woke up, I couldn't speak.
If I would have followed a treatment plan, I would not be in this situation.
It's a tough journey.
Lowering your high blood pressure could save you from a heart attack or stroke. If you've stopped your treatment plan, restart it, or talk to your doctor about creating one that works better for you. Start taking the right steps at manageyourbp.org.
It's a new life, but I'm going to make it better. I'll come back. Ask your doctor, check your blood pressure.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.